shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie. I want to get out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar. A great, great bad movie to make fun of this week. I am joined this week by Cody Wolf.
Hello.
Jack Estabrook.
Anyone who's seen this movie clearly suffers from risk addiction.
And Brian Mueller.
Got nothing.
This is a tough one. There's not a lot of quotes.
I feel like I could just say something about sex and that would suffice.
If you just say it in like a sexy way, it fits.
What do you want?
Wait, that's what you have to do. Yes.
What do you want me to say?
Yes. Our
hey,
movie
Cody.
This week is
hey, Jack.
Hello.
How
Basic
are you feeling?
Instinct.
I'm feeling that you shouldn't be smoking here, Brian.
Our session is over. Wait a minute. That was a Connery.
I know. I can't get put it out.
Our movie this week is the sequel no one was ever looking for.
Speak for yourself. Basic Instinct 2. Speak for yourself, Alex.
Basicer instinct.
Even more instinctual. Starring Sharon Stone.
As this the only one out, who came back.
I don't know. This is like 10 years old now, isn't
this
it?
This is 2006.
This is like 2006. Yeah. And the original Basic Instinct is from 92. This is from... So this is 14 years
after the
original.
So by 2020, we'll have another... We'll have Basic Instinct 3.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we just touched on it very briefly, but I just... Why? Why a sequel to Basic Instinct? I mean, no one was saying, well, what's going to happen next? I mean, the movie seemed to...
Dollars.
Yeah.
Dollar. We wanted to know what happened with that ice pick.
I guess so. The ice pick was barely in the movie. I was like, yeah, she's got an ice pick. And then, oh, nope. Oh.
There were so many terrible callbacks from that movie.
I never saw the first one.
They were desperately trying to tie
there
in.
There were a ton of, like,
they did the leg split thing, except she was covered by a chair. They did the obviously,
reaching,
she spoke about it. Yeah.
The reaching down.
Well, I'll do just a quick summary. The first one is a trashy movie. That's very aware it's a trashy movie.
Well, Paul Verhoeven's got a sense of humor, so...
And he's got a sense
kind
of humor,
shows, yeah.
And it's kind of actually a movie that is trashy, but also has... I don't want to call it smart, but there's a little bit going on, like,
the first
under
the
surface.
It's suspenseful.
It's suspenseful, and there's, like, clues. There's actually a whole thing that came up that you can watch it different ways, where either the Gene Triplehorn character or the Sharon Stone character could have been the killer,
yeah.
And there's clues for both, and... So it's very aware of what it is. This is a incredibly dumb movie trying to sell itself as a smart movie, and that's
yes.
what
incredibly
that's
unself-aware.
Very
yes.
oh totally. I would say the only characters who are aware of the movie they're in are Sharon Stone and maybe the David Thewlis character,
yeah.
who at times seems to understand that he's in a trashy movie,
yeah.
and no one else. That's it.
Yeah.
All right, we'll start
so
it off.
The open of this movie is like, has to be the craziest open of a movie we've done so far.
Oh, I would say
it's
so.
It's pretty crazy.
It was so
yeah.
crazy, I was sure it was a dream at first.
Yeah, it's Sharon Stone.
Might have been, who knows?
Sharon Stone driving around London with a stoned guy going 100 miles an hour as he is sexually pleasuring her while she's driving
she's
the
sexually
car.
Pleasuring
she's
herself.
Like using
and
his
herself.
Hand
yeah.
to sexually please
It's basically
herself.
Like that Louis C.K. stand-up.
Yeah.
Where he's talking about the lowest form of self-gratification. That's basically
yeah.
what she's doing.
Yep, yep.
Using someone else's hand that she's guiding to pleasure
yeah.
herself.
And as she is reaching climax, she drives off a bridge into a river with her sports car going right into a river.
That's why I thought for sure this was a dream.
I really thought so, because she's also unfazed. I mean, she is...
Yeah.
This
she's like,
be,
I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, she seems totally comfortable that this was like the sequence of events that she was going for. And she leaves this dude to die who's in the car with her. He only seems mildly concerned that he's dying. We later,
she does. Now get this though. She does try to unhook him though. Because I think again like in the first film they're trying to give you a shadow that she might not be a sadistic killer and it's just kind of coincidence that she ends up in these situations. Or that she's somehow controlling it a little bit. And I thought that that was that, because it's clear. At first I was like, oh man, she totally killed this guy. But she's like, oh my God. And she's holding her breath. She's trying to get the seatbelt undone. And then when she can't get the seatbelt undone, she just kind of shrugs and swims up, which is a pretty cold thing to do. But she's a very cold character to begin with. And obviously she put him in the scenario, which is why he's dead. but well, they don't imply that she really wanted to kill him. Like, she doesn't, like buckle him in and then, like, wave bye-bye and swim up. She tries to break him out.
Well, this movie is also an untrustworthy narrator, as we'll see later on. So yes. Who knows? Because we find out then in an interrogation scene that the dude she was with, his lungs were shutting down because of drugs that had been put into his system, so that... Maybe.
Well, that's the problem with this movie. Yeah. They basically say that every single character could have been the killer and is untrustworthy.
Yeah.
And they even make that point in the movie where they're like, yeah, you really can't trust people even when they're telling the truth, it's a lie.
Right.
So it's like, okay, so really nothing anyone says is
like everything should have even matter. Things you see in the movie should be said as allegedly, you know.
Yeah, grain of salt.
So Sharon Stone is Catherine Tremell, and they're going to charge her with this dude's death, this football player's death. And she has to go see a psychologist to get a psychological evaluation. That psychologist, Dr. Glass, played by David Morrissey, better known from fans of The Walking Dead.
The governor.
It's the governor.
Doesn't have an eye patch here.
That's right. And she walks into the psychological evaluation with her lawyer. As soon as she sees that this guy, Dr. Glass, is kind of good looking, she's like, hey, lawyer, get out of here, you know. And we get what is really the overarching thematic trend of this movie, where with the whole, you can break down the whole Sharon Stone character of every quest, she answers every question with a question, which is a great game to do. You know, how are you today? I don't know. How are you
today?
It's also
very maddening to watch.
Oh, it's frustrating. Crazy making.
It's just frustrating because it's simple things. It's not like even major plot points.
Dialogue to, you know, appropriately for the name of this movie was about as basic as it gets.
Yes. Yeah.
Did so you? It was like, does it bother you if you're wrong? Does it bother you if I'm right?
Exactly. Everything is like that. And okay. It goes on endlessly. Yeah, without a hint of irony. Yeah. Without a hint of irony. And it, you know, and she's kind of like hitting on him, and he's not really responding to it. And she's more restrained than Uma Thurman in Batman and Robin when she's doing her Mae West impression here. This is actually a more nuanced version with, you know, the lines like, "I bet you like to take risks." Beep beep beep, Dr. Glass. And she's smoking, and we kind of get this weird trend in the movie where he's like, you know, you can't smoke in here, and she just continues smoking. How does she have a lighter, by the way? She's in police custody. Like, is that normal for like,
I don't
people
know if they would take. I don't think that would take that away from you. If she's,
an instrument that produces
fire? If she's simply in interrogation.
I mean, I guess as long as she's,
I think she's under arrest. I think she's in.
Like, oh, she's actually
I think
under
she's
arrest.
In,
okay.
Yeah, I think she's under arrest because she's being like charged with this crime, and they're prepping
for. I guess as long as she's posted her bail, she
well, I guess maybe.
Lighter.
I guess maybe. I kept thinking
well,
she was in police custody.
Though.
Yeah,
they're trying to find out if she was. Could be eligible for bail here.
I think
oh,
she
that's
was.
Right, because that's right, because it was dependent on her evaluation.
So she was in custody with a lighter. That must have been a very interesting cell.
Yeah.
And at trial, Dr. Glass is like, she has a risk addiction. I suspect the only limit for her world would be her own death. And, you know, he's like, I think she's a danger to herself.
Yeah.
Really, pretty much a straight-up hatchet job on Sharon Stone, in this. Sharon Stone's character.
But she seems to be, like, intrigued by this. Like, she's happy that he's given her this diagnosis.
Yeah, she's kind of into it.
Yeah.
Like, and then...
Like, he's figured me out.
So now we go into this movie's other plot, which... I never have to hear the word Chesnov again, which is fine.
I really didn't think that was going to be like the driving force of the movie. When they mentioned that, I was like, all right, that's probably going to be a callback at some point. But no, this is like the main overarching theme.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't see this in the movie. This is like in the character's past that he had a psychological evaluation of a guy
named Chesnov.
He gave him a pass, said he was safe, and then he immediately went and beat his girlfriend to death. So he has this guilt sort of weighing on him But at the same time,
I don't even know if it's guilt. It's more like he's worried it's going to affect his career.
It's hanging over his head, so he can't advance in his career, and he's stuck working this civic job at a police station instead of working in academia, where he's going to get the cushy lifestyle and the good pay and the tenure.
Well, there's a central question which is never really asked and never really answered of, did Dr. Glass act improperly with this Chesnov guy, or and not report it properly, or should he have known, or didn't he? The Who movie knows? Has you believing wildly different things.
We'll never know.
Different, yeah, there's no way to know. And there's times you want to be like, movie, I don't know. Like, you're telling me. Like, I'm watching the movie. It's very frustrating how this...
It is.
And Dr. Glass has an ex-wife who is dating a journalist.
It's like a magazine reporter who
like
is trying to...
Yeah.
He's trying to, like, help to solidify his... the demise of his career. He seems to hate the psychiatrist. He seems to want to bring him down.
What also appears
want to
that
write
like
the article about Chesnov and how
do like, I feel like six people based on this movie, like six people live in London, right?
Yeah,
is
yeah.
that about an accurate number?
Yeah, that He's sounds about right.
Other, yeah. yeah, everybody's running into everybody,
and they all
and
yeah.
literally at one point everyone is dating everyone.
Yeah.
like, later
yeah,
in this film.
Every I think all of the main characters like sleep with each other at one point.
Yes. Yeah, within yeah,
this
very short stretch.
And once again, the theme of the movie where you never know what the truth is, like, the article that this journalist is supposedly working on, the theme of it changes constantly. Like, at this point, you think he's writing about Dr. Glass and how he inappropriately diagnosed this guy, and then it's like, no, it's about this cop that's planted evidence on people and killing people, and it's just like, you, once again, have no clue what he's really writing about.
No.
And the movie doesn't even let you say, like, oh, here's some more information we're providing. We're, like, peeling layers off the onion. Nope. It's just giving you
it's just people
contradictory
saying things.
Information.
You never see any evidence of anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it turns out that the guy who said that the football player who died in the Sharon Stone car crash was on drugs perjured himself. So... Sharon Stone is released from jail. They kind of like gloss over that pretty quickly because I'm
that's
like
pretty big
what?
Plot point.
Yeah, I'm like
yeah.
Doesn't,
which I still don't get.
He perjured
like,
himself in another case, so he's not a credible witness in this case.
Regardless of what happens with that, the fact of the matter is she drove off a bridge at 100 miles an hour into a river, and a guy died who is in like somewhere. There's
oh,
a
yeah.
charge
I
there.
Mean, she admitted to
regardless
like,
of whether a guy perjures
yeah.
perjures
yeah. How
himself.
How did he perjure himself on a toxicology report? Like that's a pretty basic thing, which you could also, by the way, have redone at any point by an independent lab. That didn't make any sense. I mean,
well,
maybe I'm nitpicking
least,
the wrong thing. But.
Yeah,
yeah. Just because that guy said that he sold her the drug that was in the guy's system.
Right.
So basically, she got off because she didn't give him the drug, but she still was like. Pleasuring herself with him, his hand. She admitted to this to the cops, like in her interrogation.
Yeah,
I was having
yeah.
driving
sex
120
miles an hour.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
at least manslaughter,
yeah.
whether the guy has drugs in his system or not.
That's yeah, absolutely. The guy. Yeah, this makes no sense.
This is not the American justice system, though. They do things a little differently in the UK.
Yeah. Well, harsh indictment.
Jack is writing an article. Yeah.
It's those damn wigs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna say. By the way, is that really how they make everyone wear those
yes,
wigs?
Yes, they do.
But
yes,
that one
they
woman
do.
It made me laugh because like
yeah, that one woman
she's got
wig
like
was
sitting
there.
On top of her hair.
Yeah, her wig
was like
yeah.
a wig
like
yarmulke.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That
was
absolutely,
definitely.
And then there's a big box in the center where you sit. And, yeah.
Wagmaka.
That was definitely played for. I hope that was played for comedy.
Yarmulke.
We then get one of the other characters in this movie who I never really understood who he was, but some fancy psychologist author who
yeah.
seems to like Dr. Glass's work. And
but he also likes the novels of Kathleen Trammell.
Yes, yes. And we're introduced to this guy at a party scene. And it's clear, like, we're being introduced to him, like, oh, we as a movie need to introduce this character to you so that when he comes back into the movie, you'll understand
who
he is. But I was like, I don't understand who he is, and when he comes back into the movie, I didn't understand why.
No,
so.
I guess he was his ticket to, like, the world of academia and a cushy job.
I guess so.
Because he was the one that was deciding whether he was going to get this...
The
grant or yeah, chair
the Douglas
or
chair.
But
yeah.
is that plot point really important?
No,
because I would say
well,
no.
I thought
well,
right.
I think
it's what later on would potentially give him motive to prevent this journalist from publishing this
good
article.
Point. Yeah,
because
yeah, again,
he was concerned that if this article came out that said, oh, he knew that guy was going to kill his girlfriend, that he would never get this chair and he would never get this cushy job. And also, it could have ruined the career, the job he had at that point.
Because
they're setting it up that he might be the killer.
That was one of the few points of the movie I did understand.
I guess, yeah. But in a later scene, that like...
it basically gave him something to lose.
I guess, because the head psychologist does say later on in the movie that he's aware of the Chesnov situation. Yes. Everyone's aware of
this.
Right,
but at that point, I think... At that point, the main psychologist character, Morrissey's contention was that just happened. He didn't know it was going to happen. It was a fluke thing, whereas he was concerned it was going to come out that he actually knew that was going to happen.
I see.
And the movie takes forever to set all this stuff up, by the way. This movie is about a half an hour longer than it should be.
Oof. Yeah, I might even say longer than that. So Catherine Tramell goes to Dr. Glass's office. His office, which appeared to be a spaceship to me.
That's a pretty sweet office.
For a guy,
looked like a rocket ship.
I mean, if that's the office he has before the Douglas chair.
Oh, that's pretty. I'd settle
for
that.
And she wants him.
He has like a whole
floor. Oh yeah, he does.
He has like an office, and then he comes out. And he has like a whole like floor at his disposal.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing very well.
Yes.
I mean, and I think he's
doing
just fine.
Why is this guy
fine.
Living in a little apartment?
I felt at one point like he was living the life of Leonardo DiCaprio's character from like Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, I know. Like minus not having any employees around him.
Yeah. Or you know, we don't really see him working. And then we get this kind of scene that I think is supposed to be a game of cat and mouse, but is really just a bunch of silliness, where she's also grilling him about this Chesnov case. This is where it starts showing my notes.
The
first,
because Sharon Stone visits him, and she wants him to be her psychiatrist, whatever.
Right.
Because she like realizes after she hears him talking in court that she actually does have problems, and she actually is addicted to risk, and she's a danger to herself. So he eventually agrees to take her on as a patient. But then in their first, like you said, in their first therapy session, she's instantly asking him about this case.
Yeah.
Like, why do you even care? What does this matter?
She's throwing up a wall.
Which kind of leads me to my whole question that I kept kind of waiting to hear an answer to throughout the movie, and it never materializes, is why is she so concerned with this guy?
I don't know.
Like, why is any of this happening?
I think she just wants to bang him.
Seems deeper than that.
She's crazy. I don't know. She's a crazy person.
Yeah, I don't...
Like, she's really interested in him.
It never answers... There's two essential questions that the movie never answers, or that never brings you in. For the movie to work, you have to kind of understand what Catherine Tramell's motivations are, which you never understand at any point in the movie. And you also have to be... The movie, in theory, should be saying that this doctor should know Catherine Tramell is dangerous, but can't help himself... from being with her, which they don't really succeed at that either, because you're just like, no, this guy's an idiot, and he seems to like flip like a light switch at one point from being against Catherine Tramell to like in love with her.
But it's like the more repulsed he should be by her, like the more
into it he is, and they don't really even play
at one
off
point,
of that.
Like at one point, she's towards the end, he's like, or I think before they actually bang, she's like, "Oh, you like killers, don't you? You like whatever." And it's like
they don't really establish.
But
this
he seems like a normal guy up to that point, and it's like all of a sudden he's like, the more people that he thinks she killed, he's like, "All right, I'm really into you now."
Yeah,
and the thing is, in the first one, like with her character, you kind of knew her motivation because it was either. She was innocent, and she was kind of like wrong place, wrong time. So she was just basically trying to live her normal life, which was this kind of loose lifestyle, but she was being herself. Or on the other hand, she was a serial killer, but she was trying to cover her tracks and everything. But so you kind of realized what was going on there, because the whole movie, there was this murder investigation hanging over her head, so she kind of had to watch what she was doing.
Right.
Whereas this one, they clear her immediately of the murder. So it's like, why is she still...
There's no stakes.
Yeah.
She should just blow town. Yeah.
And she, like, embeds herself in his life by sleeping with, like, as we'll find out later, she sleeps with his ex-wife.
His ex-wife's lover.
Befriends his boss.
Yes.
and befriends the guy that he's hoping to get a promotion from. Yes. So she's actively like putting herself in these situations where, right, in the first one,
yeah,
like Michael Douglas was the one pursuing her and it was like a murder investigation. It was this like a one, cat you have no idea what her motivation is.
More yeah. creatively yeah. done in the first one.
Yeah. There's a lot of this, and he's, you know, she's talking about how, like, oh, if I was with someone when they die, I would never forget that, and that's such a, I'm like.
And then, of course, they discover that guy that she was talking about is dead.
And then she's yeah. like, hypothetically, if I were to tell you that I did kill that guy in the car, would you report me to the police? And he's like, no. Which I don't think is right, but.
Yeah.
Like, I know there's the whole. Patient well,
in England, things are different, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. UK.
The confidentiality thing's different.
The Hippocratic Oath is, no.
But then you get this whole thing yeah. the rest of the movie where she asks him that, and then she, like, later on is like, yeah, I've killed 3 people. And then she's like, just kidding, I didn't, but just wanted to see how you'd react. It's like, what?
And, you talking about? Believe, and yeah. even she calls him out on it. Like, you don't believe me when I say I killed someone. You don't believe me when I say I didn't kill someone. And it's like, well, of course not. Because you say both in one sentence.
Yeah. And at one point, she, at the end of a therapy session, she says, I'll see you tomorrow. And I'm like, whoa, she's at daily therapy? Like,
well, later on, that woman therapist says something about him seeing her 5 days a week.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, like, that's pretty unusual. And we just, we kind of, well, I guess
the next scene's the party scene where she shows up at a party with a bunch of other psychologists
with the old, with that,
with the old Sigmund Freud guy.
Yes, let's call him Sigmund Freud. Yeah, let's call him Sigmund Freud. Yeah, she's there with Sigmund Freud, which Dr. Glass is now like, what are you doing with him? And he has this other character of this. He has a girlfriend, I believe, in the beginning of this movie, right?
See, I was confused by their relationship.
I thought this was just a girl that he was kind of like into, but not really, where he, you know, it's not really like a crush thing, but kind of like, well, you know, maybe kind of thing.
Well, and I was confused by their relationship and what happens in the next scene.
Because when Sharon Stone comes in the room, he's supposed to be getting so turned on by Sharon Stone. And then once Sharon Stone leaves, because he believes so much in his oath, he's not going to sleep with a patient, that by coincidence he sees that other girl and he says, you know what, I kind of have a little thing for her anyway, so let's go back to my place. And because he's supposed to be this successful, attractive, and charming guy, he's able to do it. And then, of course, we get the unnecessarily gratuitous scene where they are doing it.
Well, they're having sex while he's looking at a black and white photo of Sharon Stone on the back of a book cover from like one of Sharon Stone's books he bought. It's a really weird, and it's not sexy, and it's just weird.
Well, this is where I was confused by their relationship, because
we never see her
thought,
again.
I thought it made it seem, yeah. Well, I thought it made it seem like they had never been together before, because after when they're getting ready to leave the party and he's getting the coats, he's like, oh, do you want to get a drink or something? And she gives this look like, oh yeah, like that'd be good. Like, it's the first time he's ever asked her.
But I also felt like we'd seen them together earlier in the film.
Well, they were at that lecture together. Idea was that maybe if Sharon Stone hadn't entered his life, maybe this divorcee would have pursued this lady.
And I got, well,
this is,
and
a
I,
plot full of maybes. Yeah, go, yeah.
I just got the feeling that there was something weird between them, because then later on, when he's being questioned by the police about a death, he's like reluctant to give up the name of the person he was with for his alibi that night.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, like, he's, it was so and so. Yeah, like it was like really bad if that came out.
Yeah.
But then, like, nothing came of that. It's like, what? He's divorced. He's single. Well, it's not like he works with this lady. What's the problem?
We never see her again in the movie.
No, we never see her again.
Her exit from the movie is a
phone call that interrupts the sex scene.
Yes.
I thought she was going to be a key part of the plot.
Yeah, I thought so too.
She was hotter than Sharon Stone too, in my opinion.
No.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I enjoyed that scene more than any Sharon Stone's.
Well, that's because it was a more gratuitous sex scene. Sharon Stone's one of the top, like, 25 most beautiful women of all time. No, she's still... I would take Sharon Stone, 2015.
I like that other girl. That's all
Did you see that Bizarre magazine? Those Bizarre magazine photos?
Well, I should say, this movie also, I don't know if it was nominated.
We're not disputing that Sharon Stone is a beautiful woman.
I'm just saying I like the other one better.
I think this movie should have won an Academy Award for best makeup. I mean, Sharon Stone's makeup in
this movie looks fantastic.
She looks great. She looks great.
She looks beautiful.
And by the way, apparently she's single.
You sound a lot like David Morrison.
Well, are you putting it out there?
Yes.
Oh, I'm hoping Sharon Stone.
Brian's got risk addiction.
I like to drive 100 miles an hour down Erie Boulevard, running all the red lights, and go right into Onondaga Lake.
Right into Onondaga. So that's what it would be.
And I'll die of lead poisoning.
The Central New York version of this would be someone crashing into Onondaga Lake and getting mercury. Yeah. So he gets called. He gets called while he's having rough sex with his girlfriend, maybe not girlfriend.
Just like a one night stand, I guess, with a woman he's got a slight passing thing for.
And it's his ex wife. Who...
This is the first time I realized it was his ex wife too. And maybe I wasn't paying attention earlier when.
No, they mentioned it earlier.
They mentioned it, but they didn't establish it well.
Yeah.
And she calls him.
Where was she in the movie earlier?
He's talking to her about the reporter.
He
found out that she was sleeping with this tabloid reporter.
Oh, right. Okay.
And she calls him because the magazine reporter is dead. She didn't call the police. She didn't even tell Dr. Glass on the phone, hey, this dude's dead. Like, this is another one.
Can you come over real quick, please?
Yeah, can you come over? This is a real sandbag.
There's a situation
job.
Here.
Yeah. He just walks in and sees a dead body, and he's really not as
like in the
alarmed
not
by
the
that
most,
as he should
not the
be.
Most, not the most.
That's something you really might want to
either,
set
yeah.
somebody up for. And
this guy is naked and strangled in bed.
With
and,
a belt.
And he finds the little Zippo lighter that's shaped like Big Ben. That he found
or
in,
the one
that Sharon
yeah.
Stone handed
yeah,
him.
Yeah, in the previous scene, she hands earlier. It to him, and she's like, can you put this in my jacket?
Yeah.
As if to say, hey, look at this thing that's going to be at the crime scene that you're going to visit in about 24 hours.
Which makes no sense then when later on, when they're trying to...
And then later on, she's
in
got...
In one of the many scenes where they
the
try to deflect...
She's got like a different building.
Well, wait, I
when they
make...
try to deflect the blame later to potentially the cop, the dirty cop, it couldn't have been him because... The only way that lighter would have been placed there is if it was either on Sharon Stone or the...
I think they're saying either way she was having sex with a guy, so she could have left it there then. And then he... I don't know.
But let me make another point, too. It's they make a big deal in the movie of Dr. Glass sees this Big Ben lighter on the ground. He steps on it accidentally. He picks it up, and then he throws it into a trash can.
Yeah.
They make that as a whole plot point, which actually does come back later, where mm-hmm. David Thewlis as a cop is like, oh, why don't you throw that in the trash can?
That's suspicious.
And it's like, is it? I don't, like, why a broken lighter in a
says,
trash can isn't
he
really
says
that
I,
suspicious.
I stepped on it, and I guess in shock, I just kind of autopilot and threw it out.
Yeah. I didn't
get why that was so suspicious.
I didn't understand.
Either.
And
it's
I didn't
not like he,
yeah.
he even, like,
it
presents
his.
It. He, like, holds it up and, like, is this yours? You know, and I'm like, why, I guess the audience is supposed to be like, oh my God, that was in Sharon Stone's pocket. And he's thinking, oh my God, that was in Sharon Stone's pocket. But I can't imagine a cop. I can't imagine.
So they're all on the same page.
I can't imagine that the third character in this scenario, the cop,
yeah.
would
the
give
cop
a,
was like, oh my God,
it
was in Sharon Stone's pocket.
Would give a crap, right?
He
would. Like
where'd the lighter come from?
Like they would look in the trash and say, what do we
got? Sharon's like, that was in my pocket.
What do we have in the garbage here, guys? I don't know. There's this busted lighter. Well, okay. Like, he seems to know. Why does the cop give a crap that this lighter is in the garbage?
I don't know, because it doesn't...
There's nothing that says anything except we know that Glass doesn't want him to find out that it's important. But somehow he already knows it's important.
I think it just sets up my favorite part of this movie, which is the next scene when she has a giant lighter of the space rocket building that he's in.
Because
she had to replace her lighter.
She has a lighter of the very building they're in.
Yeah.
Well, he does a double take. He's like, what?
And I'll say real quick, like, so we do meet this other kind of third major character who's David Thewlis playing a police investigator named Roy Something.
Yeah.
Who
Roy Something.
It's Roy Something or another. He seems suspicious of Catherine Tramell.
From the beginning.
And he reveals that Catherine Tramell was sleeping with the journalist... And she was sleeping with the Dr. Glass's ex-wife and is hitting on Dr. Glass. At which point I have just a note here where I'm like, get out, dude. Like, get out.
But he's got this weird fascination with her.
That's what I don't understand about her motives. Why is she actively sleeping with everyone in his life?
I don't know. I really...
Well, I don't know what her goal is.
It seems like it's just to mess with him.
Except to write a book about a therapist that goes nuts, but you wouldn't have to really make a therapist go nuts in order to write a book about
it. I feel like they're implying that like Sharon Stone's character is like the Daniel Day-Lewis of authors, where like she's got to get so method into it. Yeah. Like Daniel Day-Lewis lived as a cobbler for years.
Yeah.
That for her to write about a psychologist going crazy, she actually has to make a psychologist go crazy, which doesn't really add up, but I don't know. And then finally she's in a therapy session. She asks Dr. Glass how he wants to be sexing her up. And she terminates therapy.
Yeah, and they do the whole callback to the famous lake crossing scene where instead she sits on a chair with the chair being backwards and spreads her legs, but you can't see it this time.
It was still sexy.
Just it was, but
you don't have to be gratuitous to be
that's
sexy.
That's one of the top 25 like most famous scenes.
That's true. Well, I guess I figured it would have been
call it back that way.
It would have been really cheap to just redo the scene shot for shot.
Oh yeah, I just think you don't do it again.
We get a really weird montage here of him seeing other patients. I guess she's not his only client.
I guess not.
But like he's
just dozing off while they're talking.
Yeah, and it's like him being like seeing other patients and being mopey around London. And all it made me think of is that montage in Notting Hill, the ain't no sunshine when she's gone montage.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, this is really heavy handed. Like we get it. Like he's thinking about her. Yeah. Okay.
Have we got to the scene yet where he follows her to the sex
club? I think so.
Well, I think that's here. She's,
yes,
he's following
that's right
her
here. Yes, he's following her to like the red light district. Yeah,
and he sees her like giving money to a guy or something, or talking to a guy.
Why is Sharon Stone paying for sex?
Risk addiction. I feel like that's the answer to all the questions.
That's what this film should. It should have been subtitled "Basic Instinct 2: Risk Addiction."
I think that was the title. I think that was the title.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
It was.
I swear to God,
I saw that somewhere.
The title.
It is online if you look at
it's
it.
Somewhere.
Yes.
It's somewhere.
I think they've taken it off for home video, but I'm pretty sure that was the
oh
subtitle.
Oh my God! I was kidding.
Yeah.
But so she's like paying this guy as he's watching, and then the guy like grabs her like violently and drags her into a building, so he's like running through the building trying to find her.
Dr. Glass runs in, he's like, oh no, Sharon Stone's
she's
in
get
trouble
raped or something.
She's gonna get raped, and he awkwardly busts in on a couple other prostitutes in their johns,
like spanking a dude or whatever,
and then he goes up on the roof and he looks through a window and he sees that actually
she's like an orgy going on.
Yeah, participant in an orgy. Cut to
It's Basic Instinct 2, Risk Addiction.
Risk Addiction.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The
See,
answers.
Jack?
The answers
You're
are in
really
the title.
You're really in tune with the filmmakers of this movie.
I am, I guess.
And then we
I
cut
can't
to
get it out of my head.
You know who else is in this movie? Is I can't believe we've had two Charlotte Rampling movies recently. You know, from Zardoz.
Oh yeah.
Charlotte Rampling. Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that was her.
That's her. Yeah, she's Dr. Glass's boss
or colleague. She seems to be like his conscience. Like
she's the Jiminy Cricket of this
I don't
movie.
Think she's above him. Agree. I think she's just kind of like due to the Hippocratic oath. When she finds out that he's sleeping with Sharon Stone, it's like, well, now you got to terminate that.
There's a funny scene of like speaking the obvious where she's like, dude, this is trouble.
Stay away.
And then if she calls you back, have her call me. And at this point I wrote down, I'm like, the guy who's playing Dr. Glass, and I do think he's probably a good actor who's horribly miscast, but he has less screen presence than my dentist does at this, he's really like...
Well, there was a long line of actors I was reading that.
Yeah.
My favorite was the one that said Benjamin Bratt was up for consideration, but she blacklisted him because he was a bad actor.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Benjamin Bratt!
I guess she didn't like him in Catwoman.
I feel like she wanted...
Poor Benjamin Bratt.
You can't be too picky when you're making Basic Instinct 2 Risk Addiction.
Well, I feel like she didn't want another strong cinema presence. Yeah. Like, I mean, this guy...
To compete? She's not in the movie. That's another thing. I was like, where is Catherine Tramiel? She's off screen for a significant chunk of Act 2 and for the majority of Act 3.
Yeah, she actually
she's
has
nowhere to be seen. They talk about her a lot.
Little.
Every now and then she does a monologue. I mean, if this is Basic Instinct 2, right?
Right.
You would think the
Risk
first
addiction.
Movie... Risk Addiction.
Basic Instinct 2.
You'd figure that the first film is more about Michael Douglas's character.
Right.
Right? Why not make the second movie about Sharon Stone's character? Why have it be more of the same? If you're going to do it anyway, which I say don't, but if you absolutely have to,
it's too late.
For some god-awful reason...
This is a tough pitch, Jack.
If you have to do it, why not have a new movie with Sharon Stone as the focus, and maybe it shows what she does. Maybe she is a killer. Show her killing people. Do something different.
I would have put her in the
movie.
This kind of movie
credits.
I wish you were working for Sony Pictures.
The tagline.
All right, if we're gonna do this, which I say don't.
It's like the movie credits should have credited her as and Sharon Stone. Like at the end of the credits, she's barely in this thing.
We're gonna do it my way.
I mean, she's like an iconic. This is an iconic character.
This picture.
You know, the people who run Sony are like, wait, did you just tell us not to make the movie you're pitching?
It's already been made, so I have no choice in that.
If Jack had a time machine, this would be the first thing he would go back to do. Yep.
If I had
take me back to 2005.
Do not make this movie. I would make them stop.
Sharon Stone, don't make this movie.
This would turn into a Sound of Thunder situation.
Do an anniversary re-release of the first one.
Stepped on a bug.
Sharon Stone turns into a fish.
Yeah.
Yep. Waves of energy here. They're changing everything.
Basic Instinct 3, fish addiction.
No!
So now Dr. Glass is at a bar talking to his ex-wife where he's like, hey, what were you telling people about Chesnov? Because we can't talk about Chesnov
enough.
We
talk about Chesnov more than Catherine Tremell. I can tell you that much right now.
Yeah. And a crazy fight escalates out of nothing. Like this fight escalates from nowhere.
She apparently told the tabloid writer that Dr. Glass said to his wife that he thought he was going to kill again.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. And then Dr. Glass is like, I didn't say that. And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, well, what? And then things go to 11 so fast.
This is so random.
And he goes full Henry Cavill, like, spaz in this scene to the point where he, like, knocks out another dude in the bar.
And he goes into the women's room and finds his wife, his ex-wife, like, spitting
blood.
Well, we have to talk about this.
He follows her to another club.
Okay.
And by the time he sees her in another club with Sharon Stone,
yep.
follows the two of them to the bathroom, and then he opens up a bathroom stall and his wife is inside dying, and he has a look on his face that's sort of like the look you might have if your waiter brings like the wrong food to your table kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, seems really not appropriate. And I just have notes here. I'm like, what happened? We've actually seen this. Was someone else in the bathroom? Like, what the hell's going on?
Well, at this point, I'm thinking, how could the killer be anyone else but Sharon Stone?
Right.
Because he sees them go into the bathroom together, goes into the bathroom like a minute later, and she's bleeding out with her throat slashed. It's like, what else could have happened in the minute where she's dead and Sharon Stone is not even around?
Don't worry, Brian. The ending will explain it perfectly.
Well, and then he calls 911 immediately.
No, he has these two other women to walk in.
He has these two screechy women.
Get a doctor! Do it now!
Yeah, get the chopper! And then, like, David Thewlis comes in saying, like, his ex-wife, we never see her again in the movie, but she's not actually dead. Yeah, she's just in a coma.
I thought she was dead, too.
She didn't die.
No, he specifically says, now your wife's in a coma.
I didn't catch that.
Now, would it be fair to assume that, assuming that she would come out of said coma, that she would simply say, Catherine Tremell tried to kill me. And then we don't know who killed her, really, ever.
I kept thinking, like,
I guess she's in a coma for the rest of the movie because we never see her again or talk about her again. You guys even thought she was dead, so that shows you how poorly this film is constructed.
And when they said coma, I kept figuring, like, well, the only reason they'd have her in a coma is that we're going to see her again.
Yeah, why didn't they just kill her?
Nope, never seen her
again.
I mean,
that one girl that Dr. Glass was having sex with before that we never see again could have been in a coma for all we know.
Right. Right.
Everyone could have been in a coma.
Everyone's in a coma.
Like, guys in the coma on the river.
I just feel like from everything that happened from, like, a few scenes to, like, the rest of the movie, all just follow the same pattern of, like, you get the feeling that, like, somehow Sharon Stone is, like, manipulating the situation so that she knows everything that's going to happen. Like, oh, how convenient. He gets in a fight with his wife that everyone sees a minute before she dies.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And it's like all these things that are happening that are making him look bad.
Right.
that really Sharon Stone would have no idea those things could happen.
Especially later on in the movie, something like that is going to happen. That, right. Like, there's no even reason right. why it happens.
And yet, you never get the feeling, like, for more than a minute that they think Dr. Glass is the one that's doing these things.
Right, right.
Which yeah. I thought was the way the movie was going to go in the second half, and it never really does.
It never does. So Dr. Glass ends up going to Catherine Tramell's apartment with a lot of, like, are you the murderer? Do you want me to be the murderer?
You know, or do you want to have sex?
And they, yeah, they have.
And they do.
They have rough sex where she like chokes him.
Now here we go. Like here again. Here. Like the first movie, it kind of you know ends with the ice pick under the bed.
Yeah,
right?
They have the callback.
So
to
now,
that.
So now I'm thinking she's gonna reach for the ice pick. Right,
and well, then you the movie, knew she wasn't going to reach for the ice pit.
Well, I thought maybe the film was going to do something different and show us Catherine Tramell actually killing people this time, but of course, no, it's trying to do the same thing because it's lazy. But she instead grabs a belt and like starts to strangle Dr. Glass, and she says, "Do you trust me?" And then Dr. Glass starts really going at it, even though he's being strangled, and that is how the other guy was killed, strangled. So we're still led to believe that she's not the killer?
I don't know. Well, he and eventually Dr. Glass gets up, goes to the kitchen for gets a drink of water, and it's like, there's drugs in the
found
fridge.
Found the TDS yeah. in the
Ooh, behind the orange juice. Ooh, there's syringes.
In fact, and the best part is he sees drugs in the fridge, closes the refrigerator, and then cleared his that point his mind is
he
like,
he does the double.
I think I just saw some drugs in the fridge. I'm gonna go back. And then he takes these drugs. Out of Catherine, or a drug vial out of Catherine Tramell's fridge. And I will say, David Thewlis also knows the movie he's in, because he's kind of okay in like the trashiness of this. And the reporter who, we now find out, the reporter who was investigating Dr. Glass also was investigating, or maybe only was investigating David Thewlis as a cop. And the
well,
cop
he
was
already
being investigated.
Wrote, like an anonymous article about him being dirty.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Or, yeah. Already posted an article about it, and now the cop was allegedly placing drug evidence at a scene.
So now
and
his
then
credibility is thrown into question.
Catherine Tramell is like, "Did you get that drug? Ha! It's insulin. You thought it was real drugs.
Congratulations! You figured it out."
Yeah.
Well, I was going to be like, "Yeah, it's penicillin for my friend."
Yeah.
I'm like. What friend? Like, you don't even live here.
Yeah, I know. And
wasn't she just, like, visiting on, like, vacation or something?
I thought she was there to research a novel because she wanted the novel to take... Because she's a novelist, which we, of course, keep forgetting.
And Dr. Glass seems slightly more gullible than Mila Kunis in Jupiter Ascending because it must have been insulin if Sharon Stone said it was insulin.
Theme,
why would I not trust her?
Yeah, the theme the rest of this movie is he goes along with whoever said the last thing to him.
Yes.
So like Sharon Stone says it was insulin. So he's like thinking the cop's the bad guy. And the cop goes and he's like, "You can't believe anything they say."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Okay, I'm with the cop." And then he sees Sharon Stone, and she's like, "It's insulin, you fool." And he's like, "Oh, okay, it's definitely insulin."
Yeah.
And even then she'll he'll go back to the cop, and it's just like
even to
and
the
forth.
Point when he goes to the cop, he's like, "It was insulin, wasn't it?" The cop's like, "No, no, it wasn't insulin, you dumb dumb. It was like serious drugs."
But he gives him a report that's
not
an official
report. Yeah, they keep doing things that make you question it because he shows him the report.
But
and
in
he's
the
like,
first,
ha, that's not an official forensic report, is it? And he's like, "Well, no."
But the first film does this a lot better, you know, again, as to trying to cast a different light. Like, Sharon Stone is clearly the villain, but is she?
Yeah.
Where this film, it's like, Sharon Stone is clearly the villain, but they want you to think, is she?
Yeah.
It's weird.
And then we find out the male prostitute dude is dead.
The bimbo.
The David Thewlis.
His name is Dr. Pepper, Mr. Pepper, whatever.
Mr. Pepper or something. And David Thewlis brings Dr. Glass to the crime scene with a really funny moment as they're walking through, like, the whorehouse. And there's, like, he sees the prostitute who he'd previously seen, like, spanking a dude. And there's this weird moment where he's like,
yeah, why did...
Hi.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I thought that was going to be another thing where, like, the prostitute... Because they had that moment where, like, she recognized him, and she had that look on her face like, oh, why is he here again?
Yeah.
Like, oh, surely she's going to go to the police and say, like, hey, that guy, like, was here.
Right.
On last night.
Yeah, which would, again, throw more suspicion on him.
That's
nope,
true.
Nope, it's just a funny little scene.
Nope.
God, they just throw some
And then Thewlis reveals that he says, well, why not lie and say that Catherine Tramell said she was going to kill someone to get her behind bars, because clearly she's killed other people. Think about the lives you'll save, which again makes him think, oh my God, you really are a dirty cop.
But then also he's kind of like, you know what, that's not a bad idea.
It seems
like he's considering it.
Yeah, he's really like, that could
Once
work.
Once again, being swayed by the last person that talks to him.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like...
He's force-fed ideas by everyone around him.
Exactly, yeah. So now he goes back to talk to Catherine Tramell. Oh, by the way, we haven't even talked about... Occasionally, this movie just dips to VO of Sharon Stone reading one of Catherine Tramell's terrible books, which are like... sound worse than 50 Shades of Grey.
I think the books are supposed to be bad, though, to defend the film. I think the books are supposed to be bad.
to defend the film, it's trying to be bad.
I think Jack might have actually been part of this production with how he's defending
the
it.
The idea, I think, is that
she's going to write the books, and I'm not saying she should have.
She's going to write them, they're going to be bad.
If the character's going to do it, they may as well go all out. I think the idea was that these books are supposed to be trashy garbage, and for some reason the people buy them,
But then why do we have to listen to her read them?
That I cannot explain, nor do I condone it.
I think they were trying to show that she was writing the book directly based on what was happening in her real life.
I think so. To maybe
at some point try to explain her motive.
You know what
it was put in for? I'll tell you why it was put in. Because in the editing room, when they said, holy crap, there's no Sharon Stone in this movie.
There's no Sharon Stone. Listen, guys, I told you, this movie needed to be about Sharon Stone.
Well, it should be.
It's had some scenes about her reading her own books and squeezing some more scenes.
Too, and she's in it for like 20 minutes, now, and it's a 2.5-hour movie.
Yeah.
She's in it for like 20 minutes.
I'm seriously starting to think that future Jack, like 30 years from now, went back in time.
I must try to at least make this movie better, but it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy of garbage.
He totally knew
the movie's gonna be bad no matter how hard I try.
He totally knew that it was like, yeah, Basic Instinct 2, Risk Addiction. They were like, Jack, that is the name of the movie. He's like, oh, really? Oh, I don't know. Why would I know something like that? It's not like I went back in time. It's like the lighter scene where, like, he's worried that, like, we know that he actually went back in time when really we have no clue.
Jack's like, I wouldn't know that. It's not like I suggested that title. It's not like I wrote that down as a possible
No, I didn't write this script under a shadow name and mail it to Hollywood. I've been bugging Hollywood directors for years. I think this movie needs a sequel.
Hey, Jack. Jack, what's this can of Red Bull doing here? I just picked it up and put it in the recycling. That's not weird. Jack, this Red Bull's from 2050.
Well, at least you know it's not expired.
I think that's a confession. In the world of this movie, it's as close
as it.
But
then again, we can't trust anything.
I can't trust
Jack
anything.
Says,
was it?
Even when it's the truth. So Dr. Glass goes to talk to Sharon Stone about
her
dreadful
book. This is the hot
tub scene.
She's going to go have a jacuzzi.
Are we already at the hot tub scene?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She's
going to
have a jacuzzi.
And she gives him a copy of her book on like a CD-ROM and then says something, which again, he really has like Henry Cavill, Cold
this
Light of
kinda,
Day rage
this is
disorder.
Like, I even felt bad for the Tramell character in this
scene. Well, I think this is a scene where they casually say that she killed Michael Douglas, Douglas's character died.
The character that they're talking about is the, in the first movie she's the primary suspect in the death of a rock star, right? And she admits to killing that rock star in this scene. She says, I killed that guy.
Johnny Boz is the character.
At the end of the movie, I believe, if I remember correctly, she's sleeping with Michael Douglas, and then the camera pans down
to
the
ice
pick. No, you don't.
You never do. Okay. Never do.
So she says, all right, fine, I killed Johnny Boz. You did? Maybe I didn't. You know what? You don't believe me anyway. Not that he would care who Johnny Boz was, because that was 20 years ago in another country. He's focused on this one case.
But he just called, he called the... cop.
Oh, that's right. He did. He called the San Francisco PD.
San Francisco cop.
Yeah.
And then,
but not Michael Douglas.
And then he just at one point like flies into a rage, jumps into the jacuzzi that Sharon Stone is in, and tries to
drown her. And then
she comes
up laughing.
You have no idea what's going on because she goes through the list of all the people that have died and goes through her motive for killing them. She's like, yeah, I killed the tabloid writer because he was going to ruin your career with that article. Why does she care about him ruining his career? I don't know.
I don't
He's
know.
Like, yeah, I killed that male prostitute because he was boring. And
Yeah.
Then I killed your ex-wife because she it's was like, it's getting annoying too.
It's like, almost like It's almost like she's falsely confessing just to satisfy this guy's needs. All right, fine. You know what? I killed him, and this is how. You know what? You're not gonna believe me anyway. So you know what? I killed him for this reason. I killed her for that reason. It makes sense.
And
right?
then she says, guess who's next? And that's when he tries to drown her in the hot tub.
And then goes home and after not killing her and just reads the book.
Just reads her
and
book.
And then he wastes a lot of paper. So first he's reading it on the computer screen.
Yeah.
Then he prints it out and starts walking around. Oh, but first he trashes his apartment.
Yeah.
Then he reads the book on a computer. All serious. Then he prints it out, wasting paper, and he starts throwing the sheets around for a dramatic...
Because he... And from the book, he implies...
paper waster.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just saying, it made no sense.
That he is guilty of environmental crimes. Yeah. I don't know if he murdered anyone, but he did waste a lot of
paper. Dr. Glass is not green.
Yeah. He can make a swimming pool out of that
footprint.
I wish Sharon
Stone brought that up at the end of the movie, too.
Yes. Yeah.
And he wasted all that paper.
You wasted a ton of paper. I gave it to you in digital form. Why did you print it?
That was the whole point of it.
He takes away from her book that Sharon Stone is next going to kill Charlotte Rampling's character, who doesn't answer her phone when Dr. Glass calls her.
She's listening to
for reasons that are actually totally unclear. Because had...
She has her headphones
She's listening to... She has earbuds in.
She has earbuds in. It occurred
but
to me at this point...
she's sitting alone in her apartment.
Had Charlotte Rampling answered her phone, this movie might have been over right at that moment. Like, that might have been the end of the movie. But she does answer her phone, so he runs over there very Henry Cavill-like.
He calls the cop.
Yeah.
And also leaves a message.
And then...
I feel like that happened in that... what was that movie with the ghost and the cell phone? Wasn't that like they try to call someone at the end?
One missed call.
Yeah. Were they like trying to call someone because the ghost was going to kill them and they're like, listen to.
Something stupid, yeah.
There was an earbud.
Also, I really love how he shows up and knocks on the door and says, can I come in? Yes. Hi. Catherine Tramell is going to kill you. It's like, oh, okay.
And then Charlotte Rampling's like, no.
She's here already.
You were trying to kill Catherine Tramell. And he's like, what?
And now, of course, he's got to believe that because it's been told to him.
Right. So it turns into this whole thing.
Sharon Stone is there. He pulls a gun on Sharon. No, Sharon Stone gives him a gun.
Well, wait. Before that happens, Dr. Glass is like, Sharon Stone, tell Charlotte Rampling the truth.
Oh, that's right.
And she's like, why? Aren't I telling her the truth? And he's like, I'll force the truth out of you. I'm like, what? And he like shoves Charlotte
Rampling
to
a
no
coffee
reason.
Table. Yeah, she hits
she
her,
hits
head,
her
on
head on
table.
The coffee table and is unconscious. And I'm like, what are you doing,
and
Dr.
then immediately,
Glass?
This is not the first time in this movie he does this. Immediately, he hurts her and then immediately he's like, oh my God, no! And he runs to her.
Yeah.
You know?
And Sharon Stone is kind of like, haha, this wasn't exactly according to my plan. And I'm like, how is this your plan?
What is your plan? Everything that happens from that point forward, like, works into her hands.
What? You knew that this dummy was going to knock out Charlotte Rampling?
You knew that
like
he was going to try to strangle you, which would then give you leverage over that other lady therapist.
Yeah.
Who would then threaten to call the cops, which would then make him knock her out.
If the drowning scene was in her book too when he tried to drown her.
I know. Like, yeah.
And then the doctor tried to drown the author.
And now they just start showing like shoveling like exposition at you where it's like, hey,
the cop could have done it.
Roy Washburn, the David Thewlis cop, he did it. He killed Shevlov's girlfriend. And at this point I'm like, I'm okay if no one ever says Shevlov to me again.
I know.
Like
yeah.
Never again. And then they imply
he's like the Guy Lafarge of this movie.
He is. So then Sharon Stone quickly gives him some like horribly constructed thing where the cop was behind everything, and convinces him
the cop killed the tabloid writer because he was going to write an article about how the cop killed Shevlov.
Yeah, it made no sense. But why would the cop have killed a male prostitute?
And why would he have killed the ex-wife?
Well, the cop even says, too, earlier when he's like, oh, I'm sure you think I did this.
Yeah.
He's like, I killed this guy and then jerked him off after he's dead.
Yes,
like,
you're right.
You're right. That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't
but
make
still,
any sense. Yeah.
At this point,
once again, he always believes the last guy that spoke to him.
And Dr.
This
Glass
character
does
just exists from page to page.
He's soaking this in. He's like, all right, Sharon Stone.
That makes
all
sense.
Right, I'm with you. Yep, okay, adds up. And she's like, take the gun. And then, like,
why
David
does he hold on to the gun?
I don't know.
Because he wants to shoot Sharon Stone, but he also wants to shoot the cop. He doesn't know who to shoot, so of course he shoots the cop.
Why does he shoot anyone, though?
I don't know.
I don't know.
And just like, and just, like, and just like 5 minutes before, he shoots Officer Washburn, and then is like, oh my god, no! And he runs over to help him.
Well, he shoots.
And then
he
gets pummeled by like 47 cops.
He shoots David Lewis, and you know what he does then? He does the Nick Frost from Hot Fuzz making fun of Point Break, like, no!
Oh, yeah. Well, I like it that the cop just gets shot, and he's like laying on the floor. He goes, "Now's your chance, kill her."
Yeah, even the cop, even dying, the cop was like, "Shoot,
he's like, don't believe anything she says,
dumbass. Yeah. She's lying to you."
And then, like, as he's dying, Dr. Glass is like, "You know what? That's a good point too. Maybe I should kill her."
Oh no! Yeah.
Even like in death, he's still being swayed.
So terrible. And now we have to talk about the actual ending, which is Dr. Glass.
And then the police come in and
they all like gang tackle him and
like 47 cops.
As he's trying to shoot her when just 5 seconds ago he's shooting the police officer completely convinced that he's the one.
Yeah.
Well, the cops, like, literally that's all it took to turn him. Him saying, "Don't trust what she says."
Yeah.
"Now's your chance." He's like, "Oh, good point."
Yeah.
Because he has to believe the last thing someone told him.
Which
is very evident in the final scene.
Well, we have a final scene where he's now in a psychiatric institution, and Sharon Stone comes to visit him, and the movie presents a storyline where Dr. Glass has been the killer of all these people.
Is this the alternate ending or the real ending?
I think it's the real ending. Okay. Well, I think ours was the real ending, because my disc said it was unrated.
Well, no,
but actually,
I think that all the DVD releases are the alternate ending.
What ending did you get? Because I streamed it.
It's the ending where she's like, "Oh, I know that you did it all along," or whatever, right?
And then it shows all the shots of him committing all the crimes. Yes. That's the ending I saw.
Okay. But some of it is impossible.
Oh, this one's
because the movie then isn't just an unreliable narrator. It shows us a version of events that would have made it impossible for him to kill his ex-wife. Like, we would have no reason to even suspect
that. Well, plus, does that mean that he killed the male hooker and then jerked him off after he was dead?
I know.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
I think that is... I mean, I don't even understand what
though
they're
they
even
did
saying.
They did show in the flashback scene to that death, they showed him watching again them having sex, so I guess you're supposed to infer
he
that
came in right
he
afterwards.
Watched, and he came in right
afterwards. He came in right afterwards.
Yeah, either way. Yeah. But he wasn't even in the same area when the tabloid writer was killed.
Yeah, right.
He was at the party, and then he went back home with that girl.
Right. Right.
So he could not have killed him.
He actually had an alibi for the death of the tabloid writer.
Though, Sharon Stone's like, I know you did it, and you got away with it. And she's like, "Well, maybe not. Maybe that's all just fiction." And I was like, "Well,
I do not
understand." And then he smiles.
Why does this scene even exist?
And he picks up her book, and he reads the little dedication that she wrote for him, and then smiles, and that's the end of the movie.
But then I think they try to make you think that he did that all because, you know, he had motives for every death that... for every killing that he did.
And
they're like, brilliant. And then you go to trial and plead insanity so you can spend out the rest of your years in a cushy psychiatric ward. But I was thinking,
what evidence?
If he really did kill all those people, he would have gotten away with it if he hadn't killed the cop.
Right.
So why not just walk away and be like, "All right, we're good.
Yeah.
They're not going to catch me."
Yeah.
And half the people think that Catherine Tremel did it.
He could have
killed all the cops.
The cop was
no one was suspecting him until he killed the cop.
In fact, the cop was on his side until Dr. Glass pumped like 3 bullets into him.
He was on his side until he murdered him.
Yeah.
The cop was begging him to just let's arrest this woman. Just tell me that.
Yeah.
Lie so I can arrest
him. So if he really wanted to get away with it, that's what he should have done.
Like, why would Dr. Glass have been giving the cop the drugs from Catherine Tremel's refrigerator if he was later going to murder? Like, this makes no sense.
Because he has no personality, and he has to be molded by every human being around him.
That's why I feel like within this movie, he wasn't the one that killed them, that they just... did that to mess with your mind, but it's like, why? Why? That's not even a good twist.
Right. No.
That's not even a twist.
It's not a twist at all. It's just an alternate.
We already had, like...
Now, if this were the movie you were watching, that's kind of what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, we already have two people that could be the killers. You already had this, like, wrestling of, is it the cop or is it Sharon Stone?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or why are we even...
Yeah.
It was Chekhov.
It would have been Chekhov. That would have been pretty good.
Yeah. Why are they presenting door number three?
I don't know.
To give it...
Because that's what made the first Basic Instinct so good was it ended with like... You don't know. You never knew who the killer was.
It could have been the girlfriend. It could have been Sharon Stone.
Yeah, yeah.
And still, even there was like an even second degree mystery where like, oh, what's going to happen now? Are they? She and Michael Douglas going to live?
Are they
going to
drop? Are they going to take a helicopter and jump into a volcano? We don't know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That could be too.
All right, let's do a quick So Bad It's Good. I am going to give it a qualified yes on So Bad It's Good because it's so crazy. And there is so much nuttiness in it, and it did move pretty quickly. So I am gonna say, it. I think it is So Bad It's Good, but be prepared. Don't use the word Cheslov in any drinking game you play with this movie. You
I'm gonna name
dead.
My first son Cheslov.
Yeah, Brian, what do you think? So Bad It's Good.
I'm a huge Sharon Stone fan, so I don't care what any of you say about the...
I didn't say anything bad about Sharon Stone.
No, you seem to think that some
I thought the
average-looking actress is...
I don't know. I think a normal-looking girl is also attractive, but Sharon Stone is a very attractive woman.
You said a normal-looking girl.
Compared to Sharon Stone...
Are you saying Sharon Stone is less than normal?
Wrong?
Compared to
what's
Sharon Stone, who's like, you know what I mean? Like a less
you
typical Hollywood beauty.
You said you prefer the plain girl to Sharon Stone.
You said plain.
You said
she
plain.
Said normal.
We don't
normal and
say
plain.
It.
What's wrong with
same
normal?
Thing.
One can be normal and beautiful,
anyway, Sharon Stone,
and then you can be Sharon Stone, who's like another level.
Anyway, Sharon Stone is one of the most beautiful women ever.
I'm agreeing
She's
with you.
Oscar-nominated actress.
I'm agreeing with you.
Not for this movie.
Yeah. He's got you there.
Oscar-nominated actress, and I thought she made the movie watchable.
Okay.
So I'd watch it again just for her sultry performance.
Yeah. Jack, your thought.
Well, I'm a little bit biased because having in the future gone back in time and helped create this.
Yeah,
film,
we can't
no.
really ask.
Yes, that's
no, no,
actually
no.
that's true. Yeah,
you no.
already,
what was the movie like before you went?
It wasn't anywhere near what this is, brother. No. To be honest, I thought this movie. I'm gonna have to disagree with Alex. I thought this movie trudged along like a slug. It was very slow. I thought, you know, Sharon Stone was good. I liked the character, but I don't think they did nearly as much with her. The concept was unoriginal. They were trying to recapture the first one, and the only time I really liked it was hearing the old Jerry Goldsmith music cue, which just made me miss the first movie. So I'm going to say no, it's not so bad. It's good.
Okay. Cody, what do you think?
There's a lot of sex scenes in it, so I would watch it again.
All right. Fair enough.
They were good sex scenes.
I want to do a quick So Wrong It's Right. I'm going to read to you five quotes from well-known reviewers regarding David Morrissey's performance in this film. Only one of these is not something that actually appeared in a major review of this film.
Okay.
This is how his character was described.
Okay, only one of these did not?
Only one of these is made up by me. The other four are real lines.
Or is
so
it made
reviews.
Up by you?
Oh, no. Do you want me to make it up? Okay. A charisma-challenged non-entity, sad sack, a potato wearing human clothes, the charisma of beige wallpaper, and could have replaced him with a mahogany coat rack, and the movie would not have known the difference. Only one
wow.
of those is and from not, and I mean from like real like known film reviewers.
I'm gonna go ahead.
I was gonna say the cape or the potato one. I think was
okay.
The one you made up.
I'm gonna go with the beige wallpaper.
Okay.
What was the first one again?
Charisma challenged non-entity.
I'm going with that one.
Okay, Cody got it right. Oh. The Seattle Post called him a charisma challenged non-entity, and the AV Club says he could have been replaced with a mahogany coat rack.
What about
harsh
the others?
Times. Another one was
I'm
also
sure
from the AV
Stone
Club.
Figured out a way to have sex with that too.
The Washington Post called him a sad sack.
Aww. It wasn't that bad in it. It was just not a good script.
He shouldn't have taken this part.
Yeah. Well, he was, to be fair, like the ninth choice.
That's true. Yeah. He was like, yeah.
I mean, someone had to play the role.
He really was their ninth round
draft
pick.
Good job on that, Jack.
Sorry. I wasn't involved in casting, I guess.
He came in too late in the process.
The problem is I don't know what's going to happen because I have to go to the future before I can go back and make a movie.
We will do a Q&A in an upcoming episode, but I did want to... I got a couple of interesting comments from people who saw that recently I did an interview with Billy Baldwin, and a lot of people asking me if I got to ask Billy Baldwin about Sliver.
You did an interview with Billy Baldwin?
I did do an interview. I was not able to talk to them about Sliver. We were at a great event for his mom's breast cancer research foundation.
Yeah, that would have been a tough transition.
It was not the time.
What was the other one he was in? Cindy Crawford wasn't doing
that. The time was not right, but I hope he was absolutely wonderful, and I hope someday I do get to talk with him. I don't know, you know, his thoughts on those films, but if for a lot of people were very confused why I was interviewing Billy Baldwin but not talking about either of those films, that was
why.
What
else would you talk about?
I know. I felt at the moment maybe we should just talk about his mom's foundation, and it would have been a little out of left field. Just quick final thought. We will be back with many more crazy movies.
Many more?
Question more?
I'm sure. We have to do Fantastic Four.
More guests.
That sucker's plummeting.
Jack, I will tell you this. If I have learned one thing doing this podcast, we have to be very careful in what we tease. We can't make any promises. Because
we should go see Fantastic Four.
We made our listeners of the show wait more than a year, for the Diamonds Are Forever episode.
Well,
so
we're not saying it's next. We're just saying eventually.
All right, Jack, I'm going to hold you responsible for that.
Don't remember, Jack knows what's going to happen.
That's true. Well, Jack does know the
Jack's
future.
Already
I don't. You know what? This is probably a better prediction than we've had for any of our other ones. We have many more funny movies to come. If you have a minute, leave us a positive review on iTunes. You know what? Even if you don't have a minute. Yeah.
Even if it's not true.
Who knows if your review is true or not? We'll have to sort through.
I like this podcast. Or maybe I don't.
That would be a great review. My favorite review we have on iTunes is someone who references several of our in-jokes and long-running jokes. If your iTunes review mentions as Rocket with an exclamation point after it, it should get bonus points.
My favorite one is the guy saying that we eat too much or something like that. We talk over each other and eat too much.
Andy Wolf.
Well,
it's
basically a review of Andy that was sent to all of us.
The eating and drinking has definitely gone down since Andy.
Yes. And I think that was pre-new mixer, too, which has helped. But we will be back very soon. We'll see you back. All right. Bye. See you next time.